Well, here we are, just us chickens. I want to thank you, everyone who helped us to say goodbye to Father Steve and to bless him as he enters into this well-deserved retirement. Goodbyes, like any transition, can bring up all kinds of emotions, right? Notably, grief. And grief is one of the signs of a life oriented around love. When we open ourselves to care about someone, we open the door to grief in various forms. So if you are feeling grief today, please know that God views that as sacred and beautiful. I want to be clear about that because I'm about to talk about things like hope and joy. In just about every religious tradition, it seems to be a mark of spiritual maturity to be open to holding seemingly disparate things together. Things like hope and grief, joy and pain. Shallow religion pushes reality into false binaries of either-or choices. But the heart of Christianity keeps drawing us into the realm of the both and, to find our way into seeing all things as interrelated and part of a glorious creation. It may not be easy at times, but building this capacity to hold things together is part of living faithfully in relationship with God and one another. Throughout the book of Isaiah, many things are held together in tension. Faithlessness and faithfulness, loss and fulfillment, promises of defeat and promises of deliverance. And yet, overall, the book is moving steadily in the direction of restoration and wholeness. In today's reading from Isaiah, we have a passage written during the period of emergence from exile. And the writer, bearing the weight of the recent past, nevertheless looks forward to greater fulfillment of the covenantal relationship with God. In this passage, we see uninhibited exuberance and a choice to celebrate God in anticipation of what is to come. I will greatly rejoice in the Lord. The words here are very much like the already and not yet of the kingdom of Jesus Christ. On the one hand, the writer talks about being clothed with garments of salvation and covered with a robe of righteousness. But on the other hand, the following metaphors are ones of anticipation for the future, the thing not yet in fulfillment. A bridegroom is putting on a garland, and a bride is adorning herself with jewels. The earth is holding seeds that will eventually spring forth into vegetation. The writer is speaking from an interim time, a time between experiences of faithfulness in the recent past and the yet unknown fulfillment of hope. And in that interim time, the writer chooses to have his grief and longing held side by side with joy and hopefulness, to bear grief and yet also wear a garment of joy. Mary's hymn of praise found in the Magnificat shares that same blending of the already and the not yet. She knows that she has a part to play in the eventual fulfillment of God's promises and accepts this tremendous request upon her body, heart, and mind as a way of partnering with God in what will unfold over time. She could not have done this without some measure of fear and possibly grief. But she did leap forward with radical hope in a coming kingdom that would upend systems of injustice and inequity. Mary is sometimes referred to as the first Christian because she was the first to take Christ into herself, which she did quite literally. Mary may also be a symbol for the church. Just as Mary bore Christ in her womb, the church also bears Christ in the world, participating in the work of salvation, righteousness, and restoration. That is, when we're actually living into that call. We remind ourselves of this call each Sunday in our liturgy. For at the altar, God redeems and renews us. And at that same altar, we gather up every aspect of our life and offer it to God for the sake of the unfolding kingdom of heaven. The texts that we read today are full of expectancy, expecting the coming kingdom of heaven, expecting the fulfillment of God's promises to our ancestors, expecting that we are already seen by God as children of God, expecting that righteousness and sacrifice will not go unseen or prove futile, expecting that there is something in the works that cannot fail to rise up in spite of conditions that suggest otherwise, like a garden that causes what is sown in it to spring up. What has been sown within us at Good Samaritan? What seeds lie just beneath the surface, being nurtured in a womb of warm earth until a time when the shoots will spring forth? This is an interim time for us, a time for us to practice the holy work of the church, even while we do not have a rector. This is a time for us to choose to get deeply curious about those seeds within us, to cultivate those, and to imagine together what the next season of fruitfulness may entail. What kind of leader will help you in the work of gardening? What kind of leader will join you in bearing fruit? And what's more, what kind of fruit is this parish called to bring into life? I encourage you to sit with these questions and to talk with one another about possibilities that occur to you. An interim time can be a time of hunkering down, laying low, or even freezing in place. But I encourage you to embrace this interim time as one of deep discernment, experimentation with new rhythms or ways to serve, and the practice of hopeful action and imagination. Imagine yourself for a moment as someone cloaked with a robe of righteousness. In Hebrew scripture, righteousness wasn't about innocence or piety. It was about living in healthy relationship with God and others. So there you are, in a garment of ultimate safety and of healthy relationship enfolding you. You are held by the living God. What does that make possible? In what ways are you actually then set free to act in this world? What no longer needs to hinder you from the work of love and restoration? What old enemies are put to flight when we see ourselves enfolded in safety and healthy, thriving relationship. This is the guts of the gospel. And in this interim time, we get to explore it with renewed intentionality. If we are able to comprehend the gospel and what it truly means for us, we will be unleashed to better translate that as we live out our lives at work, at home, in our neighborhoods, and within this fractured country. It requires actual love and empathy in order to grieve. It requires grief to see the need for reconciliation and restoration. And it requires expectancy to risk the seemingly foolhardy work of joyful action within a broken world. Turning our attention back to Mary, what did she do in her interim time, her time of transition and transformation? She accepted the call. She prayed. She joyfully imagined the future. She reached out for a spiritual companion. And she labored and birthed and pondered what was being unleashed. And in the season that followed that, she puzzled and loved and worried and grieved. And at the resurrection, she rejoiced. And we can do the same together. This Wednesday, I'm going to bring back morning prayer and Compline online on Facebook. And I encourage you to join me in prayer on Wednesdays during this interim time. If you can participate in morning prayer at 8 a.m. or Compline at 8 p.m., that would be wonderful. But any form of prayer on Wednesday that is particularly set aside for praying for this church is highly encouraged. Maybe you do that while gardening or washing dishes or putting your children to bed. Whatever form of prayer you use, I invite you to take time each Wednesday to pray for our future rector and to pray for the unique vitality that God is calling this parish into. And just as Mary sought out Elizabeth, I encourage you to seek out fellowship with each other. Let this be a place of refuge, encouragement, and renewal. And just as Mary labored and birthed, I invite you to labor in some way. There are lots of ministries here at the church that need fresh hands. And there will certainly be a need for your participation and voice as we create a parish profile. Where can you labor alongside others? And what can you help birth? Both Mary and Isaiah are clear that the coming glory of the Lord involves relief for the poor, a lifting up of those who have been exploited, the feeding of the hungry, and freedom for those held captive. So those might be some good things to consider when imagining the future of Good Samaritan. If the gospel is oriented toward these things, how might this parish, given our context and our gifts, bear fruit in these areas? Let us imagine with hope, and let us act on our expectancy.